week that I was going to be on the docket this morning, and prior to knowing that, I had laid plans to stain my deck this weekend, and I had tickets for a date with my daughter Molly to go to the UNI game last night. So some prep work had to be done for my deck yesterday, and then I wasn't going to miss my date with Molly. So all that to say, there may be a few slides that seemed absolutely brilliant at 3 in the morning, but in the light of day, it may not survive. We'll see as we go along. Speaking of progress, I was kind of wondering for about the first half of whether the ISU offense was actually going to show any progress, but they kicked it in, and we had a good, at least from my perspective, we had a good outcome. I know we got a few UNI fans here, so payback for last year. Today we're going to talk about the whole idea of progress and of development. I'm going to lay out some of the opportunities for ordered learning and for personal development this fall, both in Ames and in Des Moines. We did the same thing last year as a launch to our school year. And I've opted this morning I'm going to do a little more storytelling rather than developing like a deep biblical theology of ordered learning and all the amazing things I did last year at this time. I thought, why repeat all of that? So I'm going to do a little more storytelling this time. But just to kind of get our minds into, and we use this term ordered learning quite a bit. And when we use it, it's rooted in some of the leadership church establishing material that you read. I mean, there's often a critique that you'll see of the absence of any kind of ordered learning, any kind of developmental process for adults. In fact, you'll find afoot today a movement, actually a call back to what they term an adult catechism. J.I. Packer, some of you that may have been influenced by his book Knowing God in years past, he's got a couple books where he's making a call back to an adult catechism. Tim Keller and his some of you have read any of his stuff. They've actually created a catechism that can be used both for children and adults. But there's a fairly widespread awareness that in the midst of a postmodern culture where the very idea of truth is under question, and as leaders have just monitored kind of the state of the church, you hear these voices all over the place that there's an absence of substantive development and the term they would use of discipleship of adults. I mean, it tends to end at childhood with the Sunday school kind of process. And what does happen in adults is very piecemeal, very topical, very, very scratch where it itches. And so thus the call back to this adult catechism. Unfortunately, oftentimes, as I have observed, they're following the same structures of the typical catechism. So rather than trying to get a development across the full breadth of the New Testament scriptures and the canon as a whole, the efforts often end with the traditional kind of categories of the Lord's Prayer, the Apostles' Creed, the Ten Commandments, and just some grounding in that, and it doesn't go beyond that. But so when we use the term ordered learning, it's in that vein of seeing adults maturing and developing, not just adults, but all ages maturing and developing in their faith. The desired result is learning. The goal is not just teaching, but actually the reception of what is taught. The desire is that it be understood, internalized, and lived out, not just a mental kind of reception or an academic reception of ideas. It's learning that's ordered, so it's not haphazard or accidental, and some kind of order has been created. Decisions have been made around the content, some choices around that, and in our case, some attention has been given to thinking through what are the natural biblical categories that exist that need to be represented in our ordered learning processes. Why discuss this again? Well, some of you need to begin the ordered learning pathways that we've laid out. Some of you may be fairly new to our ministry sphere, to our churches, and this morning will help you kind of see the pathways that you can enter into that will see you engaged in a good, solid process of developing in your faith over the upcoming year. Some of you need to re-engage in ordered learning after some years of absence, and we're going to talk about just the fruit and benefit of that. Some of you need to challenge others to participate in ordered learning in the context of our churches, being able to put in front of people, here's something that's going to be unfolding this semester. You really ought to take a look at jumping into this. This is a tool we'd like to leverage for your growth and development right now. And then some of you need to be teaching others. And so those are kind of the four categories that I have in mind as we move this morning. We just got back from Michael and Caleb. And I just got back from a trip out to Canton, Ohio. And we are part of a city church network. There's 10 of us that actually make up, nine other situations that have been invited into our city church network. One of them is the City Church of Canton, and they hosted us this time. Really neat time, just a really, really profitable time. I was very encouraged as we gathered together with them. And the whole issue of development was on the table as we were together and discussing. We added one piece to this meeting. The leaders around the table in this picture, most of them have opted to jump into one of our an Antioch School Doctoral Ministry cohort with the idea that we're going to be together thinking through. We're just in a developmental process together over the next several years, and out of that is each member of that group is going to be creating tools and materials that will be useful to the entire network. And so we had this whole discussion around that began the time before moving into our normal kind of city church network gathering with a set of issues we're discussing. But the issue of personal progress and also of the problem that exists that across the churches is there's often not a culture of development. That was an issue that was discussed, and you can tell there's a concern that, yeah, I mean, at a leadership level we'd like to implement a whole number of things, but there's not a culture of development. And so how do we solve the problem that when you just even put something like our first principles material out in front of a group, that there's some pushback to jumping into that journey and moving through that systematically. And so we're going to look this morning a bit at that whole issue of the culture of a situation and what we can learn from that, what others are learning as they observe us. I had an experience this summer that was really neat, and I didn't know some of the players were actually going to be here, so I was just going to talk about it. But it turns out that a couple of you are, and the Allens are back from one of their Montana trips. But every summer we have a developmental process called Immerse that is crafted for young adults, for college age young adults. Sometimes there's a few post college folks, or even some. Late high school that are in it, but the idea is you have this intense kind of boot camp experience where we go through our Acts course, our Pauline Epistles course, and our Life to the End life planning tool. Those particular discussions are always open to the whole network, and so there's always a few others that join in with that. And so this last summer we had Elijah Bowman, Duncan Wood, Ren Gamble, Nate Peterson, and Peter Bowman from the young adult crowd, and three of them from the Yuma Church, two of them from North Campus Church. And then Zach and Julie Allen and Josiah jumped into the mix for the Acts and Pauline Epistles discussions, and Elder Don Johnson jumped in for both of those. And it was... Tim, could you give Don the mic? So here we have this scenario, right, where we got Josiah. How old are you, Josiah?
14.
14. Josiah's 14.
I'm 70.
Don's 70. I wasn't even going to ask, but Don's on 70. And then the young adults in between.
Yeah.
but thank you, Darren. The years blend together after a certain point, you know.
Started out at 70.
What Why did you do that, Don? Why did you jump into that this summer?
I was convicted at the conference last year to take the Acts course. I don't remember the specifics, but I decided that that's something I was going to do. Some have said I've lived it for 40 years, but I'd never taken the course before. So I had to write papers and put it together.
Was that beneficial? I mean, when it all said and done, I mean, because it wasn't like you didn't know the stuff. I mean, you've been. What was the benefit to you?
I learned by discussion. So, writing has always been hard for me, but it was a good experience to write down the principles and understand in a deeper way both the Acts and the Pauline.
And what was the impact for you of being in that setting with Josiah? I mean, you had the cut of the college age crowd, and then you got Josiah sitting there. He's engaged in the whole process, and his parents. I mean, what was that? You saw he had that spectrum, but what was the impact of being in that setting with Josiah?
He was challenging to me because at the end of the Acts and at the end of the Pauline, we were both the only ones that wrote a paper. But his had things in it that mine didn't have, and vice versa. So we were both challenged, and I really enjoyed the challenge with him.
All right. Grab the mic, Tim. Hand it to Josiah here. So Josiah, you're in this setting, right, mm-hmm. with your parents and the students. By the way, I don't see the students here, the young, so this is we're calling them out. Are you guys here anywhere? Nate, there you are. You're representing that cluster, that section there. All right, super. You didn't know you were talking this morning, did you? Josiah, so you're in this mix with your parents, with these guys, with Don. What was the impact for you being in that?
It was a chance to develop my own convictions and a big learning experience. Don and the college students, my mom and dad, I was able to learn from them in a way I hadn't been able to before. And it was fun for me, and I definitely want to do it again.
Now you're taking two nights every week in the middle of summer, right? So what? Why? Why? And anything else? Thoughts about women? Why you would do that in the middle of the summer?
I've been taught that learning is an ongoing experience, and the sooner you start, the more you're able to learn, and then pass on to others as you get older mm-hmm. and able to pass it on.
One other question. We had one moment. Don only planned to do Acts, right? So we get to the end of Acts, and then there was this groundswell what would you call it, Don? Challenge, a shaming, whatever you want to call it, that Don should continue on and actually do the Pauline epistles as well. And you were in that. So why did you want Don to continue?
Well, having Don himself and as an elder was really helpful. He was able to share experiences and situations that we were discussing. And then his whole life that he brought really made the conversations more engaging. Mm-hmm. So we liked having his character there as well.
Mm-hmm. Super. All right. Thanks, Josiah. I mean, it was a neat experience, it was neat because we had that cross section of the generations in the mix, each bringing their own set of insights and understandings and learning from one another. Several things I just jotted down. I mean, it was clear. It was an illustration that development never ends. At every point in one's just life phase and phase of ministry, development is needed. If you're not developing, you're plateauing and probably going backwards. We're going to talk about the maturity leak that happens, but it never ends. Secondly, that development is modeled. Having Don in that mix, I mean, it was an excellent model to everybody else of the reality of lifelong learning and what comes as you give focus to that over the course of one's life in ministry, the maturity that develops, the capacity to think through situations in light of the biblical principles, and so the modeling was very clear, and it was also clear that mission depends on development. We can put out all sorts of plans related to our goals for Ames and Des Moines and numbers of church plants and things we want to be doing within the, just our ministry sphere here, and lofty goals, amazing goals, but without the development of each of you and you encouraging others within your sphere of influence to be growing and maturing in the faith, it'll just be so many words. Mission depends on development, and that's very clear with this group. It just so happened this summer that Don was actually the only one outside of my particular church cluster that was in the mix. And I can tell you that the three young adults at Yuma Church, as a result of just their journey of growth, have been contributing deeply to the strength of that church. Would you agree, Curtis? The same with Nate and Peter, who were both a part of North Campus, and they continue to speak into that after we have just recently planted, about a month and a half ago, planted another church within that cluster. And so Nate and Peter's engagement at North Campus is even more needed in terms of investing and ministering in that setting. Zach and Julie and Josiah, without their development, we wouldn't have been able to plant Phoenix Church, and they've been making a very key contribution there. And we all know Don's contribution to our continued mission as a whole, as a Ames Des Moines City Church network. So mission depends on development. I've been thinking about the whole issue of progress, and we're gonna have some discussion here at our tables for a bit. I've just got four passages I want to look at, and I'm going to walk through them here that relate in one way or another to this idea of progress. 1 Timothy 4, take pains with these things, be absorbed in them, so that your progress will be evident to all. Pay close attention to yourselves and to your teaching. Persevere in these things, for as you do this, you will ensure salvation, both for yourself and for those who hear you. Thinking back to our First and Second Corinthians study that we've just completed, I got a couple passages, one from the beginning of 1 Corinthians and one from the end of 2 Corinthians, so you can kind of see a trajectory. 1 Corinthians 3, and I, brethren, could not speak to you as to spiritual men, but as to men of flesh, as to infants in Christ. I gave you milk to drink, not solid food, if you were not yet able to receive it. Indeed, even now you are not yet able, but for you are still fleshly. For since there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not fleshly, and are you not walking like mere men? He ends 2 Corinthians with this, for we rejoice when we ourselves are weak, but you are strong. This we also pray that you be made complete. For this reason I am writing these things while absent, so that when present I need not use severity in accordance with the authority with which the Lord gave me for building up and not for tearing down. Finally, brethren, rejoice, be made complete, be comforted, be like-minded, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. And then our familiar passage in Hebrews 5:11. Concerning him we have much to say, and it's hard to explain since you become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. I want to think on two issues, just some simple questions here. What progress is expected of leaders, of all believers, and of churches? What elements contribute to that progress? How much effort will be needed? and what will progress look like? Then on the issue of just a culture of development, who creates a culture of development for a church? How long does it take to develop it? What will undermine it? And how did we lose it broadly in the West? So I got to get some help just to pass these out. I'd like you to just go after those issues at your tables. Probably particularly the first set of questions, but both of them. And think through the issue of just, I mean, from a biblical standpoint, looking at those passages, what kind of progress is expected? What should we expect of one another? What should you expect of others as leaders? What kind of progress is expected of leaders, of believers, of churches? What contributes to it? What kind of effort is needed? And what will it look like? When I hear frequently, you know, it's never said this way, but it's often implied. It's easy for you to say because you guys have been doing this a long time in Ames. We don't have a culture of development in our setting, and so it raises the issue of how do you create that? How do you develop a culture of growth and development? How do you overcome the obstacles you're facing? That's the nature of the second set of questions. So go after that for about 10 minutes, and we'll come back. So you went after these questions. Tim is available with the mic. It's always good when it's hard to kill the conversation. Matt, you're... All right, let's go after this first set of questions. Progress. What progress is expected? What did you see in those passages? What progress is expected of believers or of leaders of all believers, of churches? What elements contribute? How much effort will be needed? What will it look like? What were your thoughts on that first set of questions? Pick a table, Tim.
So for that first question, what progress is expected? We're looking at as what progress should be expected of these different groups. And as we talked about it, it's like the expectation for leaders is going to be higher because they're going to be the ones paving the way and being examples for the rest of the believers in the church. So that was one point that we talked about. And I don't know specifically what we got into, but just that the leaders have higher expectations.
Very good. Did you see expectation in those passages? A bad question because you can answer it with a yes or no, but I would follow up if you did that. If you were annoying enough to actually say yes or no, I would follow that up with another more brilliant question. But hand it to sleeper there, Tim. What were the thoughts at your table? What progress is expected?
Thanks, Randy.
You're welcome.
So for what's expected, I think all of us have very specific guidelines, whether it's men or women or leaders, of things that we can develop in. So even when we think of like when in the epistles where it talks about set your minds on things above, like a list of the fruits of the Spirit, I mean, there's things that we can gauge our life with that we're expected to grow in. That's all I got.
I think also as we just look through Paul's letters, there's expectations for everyone within the church. You know, it's just how they're supposed to perform within their family, within the family of families, the relationships. And so we're all expected to understand those roles and somehow we're going to need to develop them out well so that obviously the church can show the manifold wisdom of God. So there's obviously some expectations for every individual within that church. And just to bring it back to what Joel was saying, the leaders have a higher expectation as well to understand and lead others towards those developmental items.
Mm-hmm. Let's relate this quick to the second set of questions as well. Who creates a culture of development within a church, within a network of churches? How does that culture development actually emerge? We've been at this for how long, Don? What's that? 40 plus years. So it's simply the longevity of time. Is that why there's a culture of development here? How does it emerge? Who creates it?
So we talked about this a little bit, but I think first off, it has to be intentional. So if you're going to, any cultural change that you make, whether it's in a workplace or whether it's a home environment or in this case in our church, you have to be intentional in making that cultural change because you've got mindsets that you're shifting and you've got focuses that you're changing. And so intentionality is a big portion of that. And I think part of that intentionality is constantly casting that vision. Why is this important? Why are we doing this? How does this impact the work that we're doing or the call that we have as a church? And so then that drives back to, I think, a big part of that culture development comes from the top down. So you've got leadership that's casting that vision and then also modeling that and being intentional in the conversation. So when you start at a leadership level, and then as you bring it down to the home church level, you've got those leaders following up and kind of re-emphasizing the importance of ordered learning and of continued development, and then following up with the people in their church and having those one-on-one conversations. So being intentional and then also driving it from the top down is a big part of what I think makes it potentially come about, you know, in shifting that culture.
Good. Zach, you hit on several things. We can talk at times about creating a culture or a place having a culture as if it kind of just naturally just developed, you know, given time and certain set of circumstances. And what is very clear in those passages is that you've got a leader. Paul, or the writer of Hebrews, you've got a leader casting the vision. You've got a leader with expectation, and you've got a leader that is creating that culture by that person's intent and by that person's communication of the vision and the expectation and the outcomes that they want to see. What one thing that stood out to me as I worked with those passages, thinking of this morning, and I've been thinking of this in some of the other contexts where this is as I have communication with people. I mean, progress is expected of all spheres, even in the. But it's, I don't know if you caught this. Progress was expected by Paul, by the author of Hebrews, even in the most trying of circumstances. I mean, if you read through Hebrews, I mean, there's some significant stuff happening. I mean, there's life-threatening difficulty. There's anxiety. There's fear. There's the author working to shore them up and to strengthen them in the midst of that. But the expectation that you saw there in Hebrews 5 existed in hugely trying circumstances. Paul, when he wrote to Timothy, I mean, he's put Timothy back into a difficult scenario there at Ephesus, with, you know, needing to bring correction, needing to deal with elders that have strayed, and you know, there's instructions on how to bring correction, and you know, some hard stuff that Timothy is in the midst of. But in the midst of even in that context, an expectation of development. Which leads to my second point there, that in fact progress is key during difficult circumstances, because the very needs of those circumstances demand that you learn and develop in order to respond well. I mean, that's kind of a wordy sentence, but if you follow it, I mean, sometimes the spirit can be there that we need to be growing and maturing in Christ. However, if you've just had a baby, all right, you got to pass. However, if this is happening, then ease off. And while, yes, granted, there's judgment to be made, there's got to be a balance of all spheres of life. And so I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but there can be a general spirit that our own development and progress in the faith is suspended for a host of different things that are just natural stuff of life, let alone a hugely trying kind of circumstance like would have existed. That would have existed at the time that the recipients of these passages would, you know, sorry, this is the fatigue of being up after the UNI game and not being able to speak clearly, but you get my point? I mean, anything we experience is going to be a mere fraction of what the recipients of these passages would have been in. If the expectation was there for them, it certainly is there for us, to be growing and developing, giving effort, energy, time to our development, and that's a vision we need to be casting. I mean, a good number of you have some leadership kind of role and capacity within your churches. You set the culture. If the culture exists, it's because you will be setting the pace. You will be modeling. You will be casting that vision. You will be encouraging others to enter into the developmental pathways that exist, and being able to articulate why and the outcome and the fruit and all of that. All right. Just to follow up on that briefly, and then we're gonna look at some specifics. But as you think about casting this vision in your own settings, again, we think about our 16 or 17 churches that make up the Ames Des Moines City Church. If you think about casting that vision, and you think about what will be the outcomes as people are engaged in faithfully engaged in order learning and in a pursuit of maturity and development compared to not. Well, with ordered learning, there's going to be an understanding of and a uniting with our shared mission. Without it, there's going to be a lacking of conviction about an ownership of our collective mission. I mean, somebody may love the Lord sincerely and genuinely, but there won't be a capacity to link arms at the same level collectively, and for us to be involved collectively in a shared mission. I have observed that there's a difference. There will be a difference between whether somebody is central to the work or just perpetually on the periphery, because as a result of that ordered learning process, there's a shared set of ideas, a shared vocabulary, a shared set of convictions that again link us in ministry together, and to the extent somebody isn't engaged in that, they can tend to just always have just always be a bit on the periphery, not fully engaged. Third, there'll be a difference between whether the person's worldview is up to the task as you move through seasons of life, or whether their worldview has holes which are eventually exposed. If you plateau in your development, something's going to come at you somewhere, somehow, some way in the future that your worldview, I mean, you don't have the biblical categories and the principles internalized that enable you to respond to that adequately. That simply will happen, and I've seen it again and again. With Word of Learning, you'll be in a position where you can be teaching others versus having little to offer. That was the spirit of the Hebrews 5 passage. You ought to be teachers by now. You'll be able to think through new situations biblically versus lacking a grasp of the principles that apply to a new situation. You'll be able to prioritize based on a grasp of what will contribute to God's plan versus having choices and priorities largely just driven by what you want in the moment. And you'll be able to discern truth from falsehood rather than being susceptible to fads and sometimes outright deceptions. Every few years, there's another thing that kind of moves across Christendom. Everybody's reading the book, everybody's reading the blog, everybody, you know, and being able to just assess and evaluate that, whether you know, the difference in being able to or not is going to be based on your pursuit of development across that time. A few examples. One of our City Church partners that had a representative around that table that I showed you earlier is a Bethany Bible Chapel. Tom Klinkscale is the senior leader there. They've managed to get 90% of their members through the first principles. And we were there actually in Boston right after the, there in Winchton, Massachusetts, right after the big snowstorm last March. Which from their perspective, it's like, you know, I mean, flights were getting canceled. I mean, they were just saying, this is normal. You know, what's the problem? But it was a very good time with those guys. 90% of their members through First Principles. And it is just so encouraging to talk to them and to hear them reflect upon the common language that has emerged, common language, a unity around mission, ability to prioritize choices. And it's not that there's anything magic about the booklets, but the process of moving through 40 passages, 40 key New Testament passages, 8 whole books of the New Testament, getting that framework of Christ's teachings, all of that going through that together, and then the shared conversation that resulted, and a common internalization of principles. Again, person after person was commenting on the power of that. And how it's transformed lives personally, how it's helped set a direction for their church, and somebody's like a statistician in the group, you know, it's on their gift mix because they've actually monitored exactly who's gone through it, and they know down to the decimal point, you know, 92.8, and they know the one family that hasn't been through it yet, and you know, talk about public pressure, just encouraging testimony from them. At our last meeting in Canton, Ben Rao is a senior leader at the Journey Church in Hickory, North Carolina, and he made this comment somewhere in the meeting that after 20 years, I got tired of propping up broken systems. And he was describing what motivated him to move out of a senior pastor role in a fairly large church there in Hickory, and to engage in what they're doing now. Which is three home churches and a fresh church plant built upon though a set of biblical principles that he wasn't able to fully implement in his other setting. And what he's saying here is that when he says I got tired of propping up broken systems, I mean, if you hear him tell the story, I mean, he'll talk about how there was an old paradigm of ministry that his previous situation was built upon, and even though verbiage like discipleship and so forth was used, the systems that were in place never got people really grounded in the scriptures, never got them really grounded in Christ's teachings in any kind of ordered and systematic way. And after 20 years of talking about discipleship, but realizing, you know, the hundreds and thousands of hours I've spent on brilliant sermons and all of the programs has not resulted in moving people's maturity an iota. I mean, when he came to that conclusion, and I'm adding my own words at this point, but he couldn't continue, and so that's the spirit behind that comment. Brokenness within just at a paradigmatic level. That caused him to make a significant shift about 6-7 years ago, and that's, you're seeing him in the blue shirt there. You see the back of his head there, is Ben Rao. Where's Tim? Give the mic to Logan. We've been discussing for about a year and a half doing a church plant out of our cluster, and about a year or so ago, the pieces just weren't really, just some things were problematic, pieces really weren't there, but began to come together, and so we've had a series of meetings beginning with kind of starting in January and onward, a series of meetings as a cluster and as cluster leaders. This is one of them, and I don't remember when Logan said this, but we were it was actually after we had gone ahead with the plant, which was in June, if I remember right, end of June, is that right, Curtis? Following that, we had two or three meetings where, in one way or another, we were talking about, okay, what's your as leaders, what's your plan for your own development moving forward? I think at one point I asked, how long do you think it would be for you to be at a point where you could be taking, you could either be the point person or the right-hand man to the point person in a fresh plant? This is right after we had just planted. But I asked that because I knew that would tell us how soon we could plant again, depending on their answers. Well, in one of those discussions, Logan blurts out, I want to replace Randy. Now, that could be taken several ways. You know, one way is I'm doing such a poor job. It's got to get him out of here. I want to replace. Why did you say that, Logan? Tell us your intent. I mean, I'm curious your intent behind that. But tell us your intent and your spirit behind why you said that.
I think it was at the time it was just a conviction I had. Saying that I've seen this work now for a number of years, and I've seen how effective strong leadership can be in driving the progression of the gospel, and realizing that if I really take this seriously, and if I'm really convicted around these ideas, that I need to be serious about thinking about this time when the generation before me is gone or is leaving the scenes, you know, and being ready to step up and replace them. That, and I generally just want to replace you. I just Randy's tried to talk me out of it, saying the receding hairline comes with it and all that stuff. Yeah. And I'm on board. I'll do it, man. I'll shave it today.
I told him there's some costs that come with it.
So, yeah, it was. I think it's just a reality that we have to deal with, that this will happen eventually as time goes on, and kind of as in self-evaluation and reflection, am I prepared to do that? And if I'm not, what do I need to do with my own growth and development to get to that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when he said it, just thinking, you know, yes, you know, this is not that I wanted replaced, but in one sense I did. One other element I remember Logan talking about in that was that we can't continue to multiply if leaders don't just continue to emerge to replace those that exist, that allows those that exist to be going elsewhere and participating in multiplication and strengthening. It simply won't happen. Seeing one generation thinking about the on a generational scale, needing to be stepping up was really encouraging. Seeing Logan think about his development in relation to mission, we can't keep multiplying if I'm not stepping up. And kind of that aha of evaluation of what would I need to do to replace Randy? I mean, that was, you know, just okay. This would need to happen, and this would need to happen, and where am I at in the process? I mean, all of that was just kind of on the table that night as we were talking. It was just really encouraging, and is the spirit I want to keep fanning that flame, you know, within our churches. All right, let's get practical now, down to just specifically what's going to be happening this coming year. We got several tracks that just to be, you know, to keep in your mind. where as people are involved in the work of ministry here, a range of tools that again are intended to help all of us become grounded in Christ's teachings and the whole counsel of God, to be internalizing and living out the principles that Christ has revealed to us in the Scriptures. So we want to see people moving into a pipeline beginning with the story, first couple series of the first principles, and life to the end, and the whole SEMA process. Now, just to quickly look, I mean, a lot of you are familiar with the story and how that moves you through a set of key passages that essentially puts the Scriptures together as one plan, a single story, rather than just kind of this loose pile of Sunday school stories. And I've heard testimony from people that have been believers for 20 years that would go through this kind of a process and would say, I've never put it all together before. So if you haven't been through the story or have been through it poorly, consider jumping into one of the options for that this coming fall, or talking to the leadership of your church and cluster about when that might be something that is offered. It's also an excellent, it can be used as an excellent kind of outreach tool, as you have folks that are outside the faith, but they're seeking and want to understand the biblical story, and just kind of test Christianity by going to the first-hand source and seeing, I mean, what exactly does the Bible say? What is the story of the Bible? First principles, again, that is our, sometimes we, what we describe as the our attempt at creating a 21st century catechism. But if you've ever been through a catechism process, you'll recognize that there's nothing in terms of just the educational process that is similar between the first principles and a traditional catechism. So when I use that term, if you've been through it and thought, man, don't wig out on me. These aren't created with a set of questions and answers you memorize and so forth. But you end up going through 40 key New Testament passages, 8 whole books of the New Testament, creating a framework of clear understanding around Christ's teachings as you move through this. And so we initially want to see people get through at least series 1 and 2 and then incorporate that into some clear biblical kind of life planning, where you're thinking through your life purpose, your roles and responsibilities, appropriate kinds of long-term and short-term goals, where you're essentially asking, what are the purposes of God that He's unfolding with or without me? And how do I align my life up with those purposes? And how does that work itself practically then into the next 5 years, the next year, the next week? And the group that went through the process this last summer, that was one of the things that they went through. That phase is followed up with, in terms of just our developmental strategy here, with a completion of the first principles and a more advanced work on SEMA. If you're not familiar with SEMA, it stands for System for Identifying Motivated Abilities. We didn't create it, we found it. It's one of the best giftedness assessment tools that I've ever seen. And we want to just see more and more folks going through that, because it can be something that creates a good conversation amongst us of just how God wired us. Are we in the what is our best fit in terms of being on a ministry team, being involved in ministry together? So I've just pictured here that last series of the first principles here. We also have Seek the Welfare of the City as another piece, which really looks at the stewardship of life and resources for the purposes of investing that in God's plan. And then as a third stage in our developmental process, we layer on top of this some of the core courses of our leadership series. And we have 25 leadership level courses. And so there is no, you should never be in a position of thinking, okay, there's nothing to plug into developmentally. If you do, talk to me. So I'll have something for you to do. But there are several of them that we view to be very foundational. The core four, Acts, Pauline, Essentials, and Leaders. We want to see everybody ideally move through at some point. The Acts course really sets that 30,000 foot view of how the Great Commission unfolded as a multiplication of churches and the centrality of the churches in what God is doing in the world right now. Paul in epistles, kind of Google Earth style, zooms down in on a single local church. And what is it? What is it? What is the blueprint and design of a local church? As you and I are involved as leaders in helping local churches become established, what kinds of things should we be engaged in? Essentials zooms in even more and asks the question: What does every man and woman need to be established in? What kind of process is necessary to develop every man, woman, and child in their faith? What is the content of the teaching they need to be matured in and developed in? And then the leaders course really looks at that whole pile of activity and asks what's the range of leadership types that are needed to sustain a church multiplication effort over time. Who are the local church kind of leaders? Who are the leaders that move amongst the churches? But what's the range of leadership types that are needed? And you get into a whole set of questions and you can around your how you fit into that whole scheme. And the shepherding course really looks at a large paradigmatic issue of the difference between the psychological care kind of paradigm and the pastoral care paradigm, and How does substantive shepherding and counseling take place within a network of churches? What's the role of elders, of mature believers in that process? And a very important discussion that has gone into there. For some that emerge in the midst of all of this, as emerging leaders, we're going to want to leverage the discipline of the Antioch School, where we actually have people go through a bachelor of ministry, a master's of ministry, and just continue to build upon what I just described. We got probably a dozen people that are in that right now, and a cohort that meets every Tuesday night. All right, in Ames this fall, there's a Google Drive file I've created that we're going to keep populating, and probably I'll ask Nancy to send out the link to that to everybody, that captures a snapshot of just in every cluster what things are you offering. Like if you're offering a first principle discussion, where is it meeting, and is it open to the whole network, or is it just a particular group that is the target? So that's going to be happening. But what I've got here are things that we are wanting, just at a network level, wanting you to be aware of. We got a cycle in place where we try to move through Acts, Pauline Essentials, and Leaders, and just cycle through that every couple years, so that nobody is actually more than a year away. If you realize, I've never, like Don, I've never done the Acts course. I'm an elder. You're never a year away from being able to start that process and move through those core four. We haven't figured out who's leading and the time and place yet, but that'll be coming this fall. I'm going to be leading the Ministry Perspectives course, which will dovetail with what Jeff just finished in 1 and 2 Corinthians, but is an excellent course that gives you a snapshot of just a realistic view of ministry. And the principles that Paul worked with, particularly out of 2 Corinthians 2 through 7, as he just opens his heart and shows you just how he thinks about ministry, the principles that guided him even in the midst of some very, very trying circumstances. I have found over in my experience that when crisis hits a church and people start making choices, that the extent to which they have processed some of the stuff in 2 Corinthians 2 through 7 will often determine whether they can navigate that well, or if there's just kind of knee-jerk kind of reactions that often aren't very biblical in the way they respond. So that's going to be offered. For the apostolic team, we're going to be continuing our journey, moving through every section of Scripture. And Bill's going to be leading us through essentially Paul and Luke, Luke, Acts, and the Pauline epistle, And we're going to do it every first and third Monday with when that gets messed up because of Jeff and Michael and them calling an apostolic team meeting, we'll make adjustments. But just in general, every first and third Monday, plan on that. The emerging leader cohort that are in that Antioch school discipline are going to be starting up going through leaders, and that's going to be Tuesdays. I don't know what time, but that'll be Tuesdays starting up the end of September. Caleb will be leading that. And like I said, there's also going to be various offerings of the first principles and of the story, which you'll see on the Google Drive link. Tim, where are you at? Give James here the mic. You want to comment, James, just on we kind of got two hubs in terms of the developmental stuff. We got the Ames hub and the Des Moines hub. So comment on what's happening in Des Moines, James.
Yep. So on Thursday nights, we've actually got a degree cohort that's actually moving through, which is some of our own internal folks, and then also a group of folks from a church in East Des Moines, Crossway, and so they're in the middle of kind of their master's degree program, and so we're doing, for that cohort of folks, we're doing theology and culture, which Michael will teach, and then we've got a first principles class starting, which John Van Roekel is going to lead, and then we're going to attempt to start the Mastering the Scriptures series as well. So Randy Wall is going to take a group of 8 or 10 folks through From Jesus to the Gospels. We were hoping to kick off an Acts course as well. We kind of want to have a similar situation where we'd love to have a first principles class and an Acts course kind of happening almost every semester on some level. We didn't have enough folks to kind of fill out the Acts course, but we would have had that happening as well. But so we're in this weird little dance where we're trying to kind of launch that piece, but have to adjust it based on who's going to show up and who's going to be there, while at the same time hoping to eventually start to invite some more individuals from Des Moines and from other churches to be a part of it as well. So that should open up some opportunity for courses like the Acts course to happen and then move down a track similar to being those Acts, Pauline, Essentials, and Leaders to get that kind of piece going. And then eventually we would love to engage with Des Moines at the level that we're doing in the City Church Initiative and have a Des Moines initiative where we can launch a doctoral cohort in Des Moines as well, but that's probably a ways out from where we are currently. But that's what happens Thursday nights for us. So.
Thanks, James. All right, your shepherding task, if you're in a spot where you've got, I want to use shepherding kind of loosely here. I'm not just talking about the elders amongst us, but if you're in a leadership capacity and have an influence into the lives of others, what do you be thinking of these kinds of questions as you're moving amongst your church, your cluster? Well, what portions of our developmental path, as you think about others in your sphere of influence, what portions of their developmental path have they processed well? So the stuff I just showed you, like the story, the first principles, what have they done, and what have they processed well? Because you can go through something and really not have processed it well because you haven't internalized it. I mean, there's Swiss cheese kind of gaps. What is lacking? What's the next step? Should they take advantage of one of the fall ordered learning discussions? Do you need to offer something as a church or a cluster that isn't currently? You realize here's three people that have never done first principles. We ought to start a group as a cluster this coming fall. So ask these kind of questions. Also ask these to evaluate yourself. What portions of our developmental task have I processed well or not? What's lacking? What is the next step for me? Should I take advantage of one of these order learning discussions? Do I need to request something? So, I mean, you can ask it of yourself, ask it of others in your setting. And if we're not engaged in this, I mean, there just will be a maturity leak. And I define maturity leak in this way, that's the mindset where you feel like you've developed enough and where you look at this next year and you don't really intend to exert energy at any point in this coming year towards your own growth and development, if that is your mindset, either consciously or subconsciously, then it's only a matter of time before you have very little to say and very little to offer. That just will be the reality. So that's my exhortation this morning. And I love this picture. This is from about a year ago when we were actually talking. We were talking about a plant, kind of frustrated because some things weren't quite there yet where we could pull it off. And this is one of our Sunday evening gatherings. And here's Megan Van Dyke. I don't think Van Dyke's even here, but here's Megan Van Dyke in the middle of the room, sitting there taking notes as we were having some type of discussion. But she, you know, just like Josiah, was fully engaged, seeking to develop, and she's actually very key because there's a couple reasons I view her as very key in the new plant that we just launched. A couple situations there. And so there she is developing, and I hope every adult around that circle was watching that and being motivated by it. But that's the spirit. I want to leave you that little mental snapshot. Be thinking about if you have questions on particulars of the some of the opportunities emerging this fall, talk to me. Like I said, you'll be getting a link that has we're populating, so you get a sense that there's some things being initiated at the cluster level that will be open to the network nonetheless. So you'll have more detail on that coming up. So with that, let's close in prayer. Father, I thank you that as we talk about specifics of plans that we have for this coming fall, in particular particular opportunities for growing and maturing and developing, that all of that is against the backdrop of an amazing plan that you're unfolding. You have been and will continue to unfold your redemptive plan that is impacting peoples and cities and countries and nations. And as we seek to be players in that and to be participants, God, we just ask that you would bless the efforts of every individual in this room as they take seriously their own just their own growth, their own development, their own maturity, and as they take steps to jump into a concrete exercises and opportunities that engage them with your word, that help them, that force them to think through at a deeper level the application of the teaching of Christ in their lives. So pray that you'd bless those efforts from young to old as we engage in that collectively and as we encourage others, and that there would be just a growing maturity, a growing capacity to think as Christ would, to take on Christ, clothe herself with his teachings, and that would in turn bear fruit in Ames and Des Moines and beyond. So we commit this to you today, and we love you. We pray all this in Christ's name. Amen.